Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston and this is episode 40. It's now Sunday the 5th of May 2013 and I'm just putting this podcast together and hopefully get it out by the end of the day. The West Highland Way race is now just 7 weeks away. In fact, in 7 weeks' time, we'll be halfway through the prize giving, and there'll be a number of people who have already gone up and got their goblet, and hopefully the rest of them will just be about to get theirs as well. And I'm sure that's the big focus for a lot of people over this next 7 weeks, as they prepare for maybe the biggest race of their lives or a chance to do this iconic race again. On this week's podcast, I've got the main item is an interview that I did last night with Ian Beattie, race director, and Sandra McDougall, who's ran the race the last 2 years. She finished in 2011 and didn't quite manage to finish last year, 2012, due to injury, which you'll hear about, and is preparing really well for this year's race. So I thought that was helpful. Ian just gives us a little bit of details about the race and a few questions that were given him about preparing for the West Highland Way race and more on the admin side. And before that though, I thought I'd read out a blog post of the week. I've not done that over the last two or three podcasts. And there was a whole number of ones I could choose from the Fling. Lots of people have written up some great reports from the Highland Fling from last weekend. Have a look at those. You can find them on the West Highland Way blogs, which there's a link on the westhighlandwayrace.org website. But I thought I'd do something slightly different, and I've chosen one from Debs Martin-Consani. Debs and Sharon and Matt Moraz are in the GB team that are taking part in the 24-hour race next weekend in Holland. And Debs has given a good written a good blog post in preparation for that. So I thought we'd look forward on this one and look forward to supporting them over the race. There'll be a number of us, I'm sure, that will be glued to our computers next weekend. It starts at midday and goes through till midday on Sunday. So there's normally a good website with these splits that go up every hour or so. So we'll be able to follow their progress as they represent GB and the West Highland Way family. So blog post of the week from Debs, and then the interview with Ian and Sandra make up this week's podcast. I hope you enjoy. The In-Betweeners. This is on debsonrunning.blogspot.co.uk. And this post Debs put on Friday, the 3rd of May, 2013. I knew the recovery time between the Thames Path 100 and the World 24-hour was quite tight, but as I write this, the former seems like 5 minutes ago, and the latter is looming faster than I would like. Still, I feel good, and it's safe to say I've got the miles in my legs. I've had my quota of canal, towpath, flat runs, so I've been doing lots of off-road. TP100 was the main preparation for the 24-hour, so after ticking that off the list, I've used the last few weeks to enjoy some fun and more inspiring runs. It started with GM and I having cracking run on the Kilpatrick Hills, which gave us the first signs of a late arriving spring. It turned out to be one of those mornings you just wish you could bottle. It was crisp, fresh, sunny, cloudless sky, and the legs and lungs were cooperating. Just magical. The weekend after, the GM was running 55 miles from Ben Glass to Fort William on the West Highland Way as her final preparation for the 24-hour race. I joined her at Bridge of Orkey and ran 36 miles into Fort William. Another glorious day with a wicked tailwind. It was just perfect. No busting a gut, just jogging and enjoying a day out. As we arrived, plenty of time before the train departure, we had time for the traditional trip to Morrison's and a well-deserved beer. The joy bubble was burst the next weekend when I had to run 20 road miles with a red wine hangover followed by a recce run on the Lakeland 100 course. Now if anyone reading this is considering a run in the Lake District, please consult my training schedule before you embark on the journey. I swear we are jinxed. We've now done 4 recce runs, all in horrendous conditions. Due to time constraints, the GM and I decided on Ambleside to Coniston, with an out and back tagged on to bring it up to 20 miles. It's a long way, a 300 mile round trip to only run 20 miles, but it was worth it to cover another three sections of the course. Plus, it's all motorway driving, so it's really only a couple of hours away. It chucked down the moment we started. It was hoods up the whole way, and the longer we were out, the colder we got. We had to stop at one point to check the map as we had gone slightly off course, and I was shaking so bad I thought I was going to break teeth. I even had to run for a while with my rucksack unclipped and hanging off my shoulders as I couldn't get my hands to work. I'll be honest, being that cold was really frightening, although it was good hill training as we were running up everything in a vain attempt to warm up. When we got to Coniston, we were beyond soaked. We got changed in the ladies' room of an establishment which remain unnamed, as we practically flooded the place just with discarded garments. Called a taxi and called it a day. Despite still being slightly traumatised, it was, as mentioned, worth it to cover another three sections, and I got us unlost with the use of a map and GPS. Check me. After last weekend's Highland Fling, when we were back on duty for Sonic, the GM, she's not sick of me yet, was so inspired that we decided to run from Milngavie to Balmerhaugh the day after, and we called on favours from Sonic to come and pick us up. He was still in good mood after his incredible performance, so we didn't even need to twist his arm. It's been a while since I've been on the south sections of the West Highland Way, as I kind of sickened myself off it. My lord, what's happened? I knew the trail had been resurfaced and upgraded, but it's practically been steamrolled, and with the deforestation, I wasn't even sure we were on the right track. It all looks so different. I was bitching about it for quite some time, until we got to the other side of Connick Hill, heading into Balmerhaugh. No slippy mud and breakneck rocky descents. I take it back. I think I kind of like it. So that's me. A couple of short speed sessions and a few easy runs, and then I'm Holland bound for the next 24 for the World 24-Hour Championship. I can't wait. And even though everyone I mention the race to says, at least it will be flat, I'm still politely smiling like it's the first time I've heard it. For now. So well done, Debs, and we wish you from the West Highland Way Race family, you and Sharon and Matt and Adrian and Marco and others are involved in the backup. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be following your progress and cheering you on from our computers. Have a great race. Hey, welcome to our latest podcast. It's Saturday the 4th of May, so it's just a week after the Highland Fling race, and I've got Ian and Sandra here, so we're going to ask a few questions to both of them and get a little bit of a feel of where we're at. So first of all, thank you for being willing to do this, and the plan is that I'm going to ask Ian a few questions, then Sandra a few questions, and then probably a few questions that you can both answer. So first of all, Ian, if you want to maybe just give us a quick introduction. I'm sure most people know who you are by now, but just maybe introduce for anyone who doesn't know who you are.
Yes, I've been involved with West Highland Way since 1998, ran it in 2000. I've completed it 8 times, and I took over a few years ago as race director, so I'm involved now in that capacity, and just heading towards this year's race and starting to think, count down the days. Somebody put a post up the other day, said it was less than 50, and that was a... I gave a deep intake of breath and thought, my goodness, better get on with some things.
Well, it's 7 weeks today, we'll be 20 to 6. You'll be finished by now.
Oh,
Sandra.
Sorry, I'm thinking it's Sunday, so.
That's only 7 weeks away. Maybe you could just give us a little update, Ian, on where the race is at, numbers wise, anything that you'd like to pass on to runners at this time.
Well, we accepted 250 entries, knowing that that would go down to at least a maximum of 200, and I think we're around about the 220-ish at the moment. I've had a steady flow of people withdrawing for various reasons, injury, realise now their training can't get back in track, the things like weddings come up and people have done that. So we've had that. Probably worth me just saying, I've been asked quite a few times in terms of what happens with if someone withdraws. Can they defer entries? And we don't defer any entries. Everyone's, of course, welcome to enter again next year in the normal way. But if they withdraw before the end of May, then people get a £55 refund, which would be back. So that's there. It'll no doubt continue over the next few months. I think experience suggests this month people are who are touching goals start give themselves a last chance, and then maybe let us know. But I think everything else is looking reasonably good shape. We've got a meeting of the committee coming up a week in Tuesday where it's just a chance to go through the lists, check everything's in place that needs to be in place. There'll be one or two things we still need to do, but I think all the accommodation's there, the goblets are ready, I think just about everything, hopefully.
Yeah. Any updates on Benglass? What's the story there?
Yeah, Benglass is going to be available at the moment. We've not heard that it isn't. My worry was that after the fling there might have been a change of mind, but I don't think that's been the case. I think everything went very well then. So at the moment we're going to basis Benglass will be available. We'll be giving out effectively a parking pass for each crew, so that only one car per crew can go to there. We'll be encouraging, in fact more than encouraging, recommending strongly that nobody goes to Benglass to sit and wait and sleep. We'd rather you do that either at Balmaha before coming round the loch, or somewhere like Balloch, but please don't spend too much time at Benglass Farm, and hopefully that should all work well. We'll do the same, I think, with Ochter Tyre Farm, because we had problems there, but last year, so it'll still be a one car per runner at Ochter Tyre Farm too.
Yeah.
But hopefully with having Benglass, that should take a bit of the pressure off Ochter Tyre as well.
Are you expecting someone to have someone at Benglass, or is it an option?
No, Benglass will be a compulsory checkpoint, so we are expecting people to be met there by their crew. We found last year with the poor weather, there were some folk, it's a long way to go from Rower Den until you see your crew again. And there were some people just, you know, were cold, all the rest, they didn't have change of clothes. So we are making that a compulsory checkpoint. People will have to be there.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. And there will be an update, won't there, with all this information on, and in the next few weeks?
Yeah, I'm probably aiming for somewhere around about middle to end of May. There'll be an update, there'll be the chance to order any merchandise people want to do. There'll be the sort of final race instructions. I'll also be looking for people to submit their details of who's in their support, contact details for emergencies and that type of thing. Again, if I could just ask everybody doing that, I'll send out a link to a database. Please would you use the format ask to put it in. It just makes it so much easier for accumulating information and printing it off if everyone provides it in that format. So that'll be in a few weeks, it'll go out and but then it'll start getting closer and the excitement will build.
Yeah. Okay. I put on Facebook the other day that I was doing this interview, and I got a few questions. I'll mix them in within our interview, but there was a couple for you in particular. This was from Mike Raffan, and he said, what are your thoughts of people using the road sections between Balmahar and Rower Denen where there's a trail next to the road? And I think there's a few people in the fling maybe did that on Saturday.
Well, I saw the question. I wondered, there's two different aspects to this, I think. There's one section just after the second campsite where I think it's some people who don't know the route would find that quite difficult to realise there's a wee bit you have to go up. I mean, obviously that's the route we want people to follow. There are signs there, it should be clear. I can just about understand runners who don't know the route doing that. There's other sections where in the past we have had one or two problems in races gone by. Some of the bigger sections that people have missed out and stayed in the road, and obviously it's the West Highland Ways, we want everybody to follow the proper route. I think we'll have a think about putting more signage up to make that clearer. I'll have to have a think about that. We'll maybe try and borrow some of the signs from the Highland Fling. It's one of the things about the sums, that if all the races are working together quite well, sharing resource, sharing things like signs. We bought a defibrillator this year, which I know has been at a couple of the ultras already that we're doing. So that's all working quite well. So we'll have a look at that. I mean, ultimately, if people do it deliberately, which I hope wouldn't be the case, then that's disappointing, and they're only really cheating themselves. And we have put marshals out in some of these points to make sure folk go around the right way.
Yeah.
The other bit I would highlight, where just in case anybody's thinking, where do I need to look out for this? That it's the section after Balmaha, the Loch Lomond side. Follow the signs, because it doesn't follow the road at all. There's very few sections you're actually on the road, so if you're on the road there, you should really be thinking, is this right? I can only think of possibly the bit a couple of miles out of Balmaha after you come down. There's a short road section.
There's a bit when you come off the beach, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then that's about a good mile or so, isn't it? Three quarters of a mile on the road.
There was a small section of road, then you turn to the right and you are beside it. And then later on, there's a short section as well. But by and large, there is a path. So if you're on the road for an extended period, you're probably right. So the other bit, though, I would highlight that we've had one or two issues in the past is when you come out of King's House and there's a big sign, you turn up to the right and follow the hill up before Alton na Fé. And again, some people have followed the lower route there, but no, it's a higher route you need to go.
Right. Yeah. I was just saying to Ian as well that on my 2-day run, I'm going to take my head cam and I think I'll just do a little video for, and I'll put on the website just to help people who have not seen the route before, just to give them a bit of a heads up on that.
I think that'd be good. The other bit about the route, and I would encourage everybody who's doing this, particularly if you don't know it, have a look at what's on the website because it's all clear. But the other bit where people do go wrong is just near the end. When you come down the hill into Glen Nevis, it's pretty obvious where you go. There's a sign, come right down the hill, zigzag your way down. There's a sign left towards Fort William, right towards Glen Nevis car park. You head along the big trail, which is fine, it's all West Highland Waymar. But you just stay in that fire road all the way along. And there is a sign for the West Highland Way which points down to the right through the forest. And that's the one where people thought, well, that's the route, I better go down there. Again, I think I'll see if we can do anything to mark that more clearly. But the route for the race stays on the fire path, goes past the Braveheart car park, and then comes onto the road there with about a mile to go to the finish.
Yep.
This is all on the website, so have a look at the photos.
Yeah. Okay, and Ian Wallace asked that you mentioned in a previous podcast about making it easier for elite runners to get a place. Can you say a bit more about that? In a recent Talk Ultra podcast, Western States and Hard Rock winner said they'd be interested in running the West Highland Way. So, any thoughts on that?
Yes, I think it would enhance the race of some of these top guys in the world. We've had some of the top guys in the world. Terry Conway's one of the top guys. Jez Bragg's one of the top guys. And they've come to the race. They've set records. They love it. Our criteria at the moment, once we're closed, we're pretty much closed. And I think next year I'm going to look at maybe keeping something like 5 spaces available after the closing date for those who... For those people who are capable of beating either the male or female course record, because it enhances the race significantly. Quite often the training plans of these top runners, to constrain them to a November entry isn't going to happen. They're thinking December, January time, what am I going to do? So we need to look at that. One of the issues we have had with the top runners is that we don't pay accommodation costs, we don't pay flight costs. And some of these top runners are paid to go into races, and fair play to them. Races want to attract them, and that's great. I know Terry was out in Spain and something, which he was sponsored to go out and do. We don't do that as a race, and I wouldn't be keen to do it at all. So really, it's if the runners want to come, the race is there for them. And we'll see what happens. But I think we'll look at changing the criteria slightly next year for them.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ian, and you can chip in as we go along. So let me turn to Sandra. So Sandra, could you just introduce yourself a little bit and maybe tell us how you got into running and how you got into ultra running in particular?
Hiya, my name is Sandra. I got into running in 2006, I think it was, maybe 5, originally. When I started up my work, the SA says, oh, what a shame, you've just missed us doing the annual 5K. And I'm like, thank God. I've never run since school, and even then I was kind of forced to. So next again, year came round quite quickly, and they say, so it's time to enter the 5K again, let's all do it. And I really didn't want to be the only manager not doing it. So I signed up and got myself a wee, well, I didn't even get a training plan. I didn't know there was such a thing as a training plan. I went to the gym and ran on the treadmill and ran outside once a week. And says, I'm never doing this. As soon as this race is over, I'm never putting these trainers on ever again. And got to the end, got my medal, and the rest of the sea is history. ultra running, I know Karen and George, I knew George before I knew Karen, and he would talk about these silly runs that he was doing, and I was just like, you're mad. You know, I was a road girl, I would stick to the roads, you know, when I was at marathon stage by this point. And he came up to pace me at Le Cabre Marathon one time, and the day after the Highland Fling, and I was like, what's it you've been doing the day before? And he's like, oh, just a 53-mile race. I'm like, you're crazy. And I just got sucked in, I think, by... I still used to think they were crazy. I would never get my feet muddy at all. I wouldn't even run on grass. It was ridiculous. And I think the first time somebody had pulled out of the Fling Relay, and they said, do you want to do it? And They were trying to find which leg I would do. And every time somebody suggested one, George would roll with laughter and say, oh, you can't put Sandra on that leg. And so eventually I got the first leg, which everybody calls the easiest and the most road. And I'd never, ever been on a trail before. I'd never been on a West Highway before. I got lost 3 times on the first leg. I know, I laugh at that now, it's quite funny. And I wore Adidas Adizero Pros, which is a lightweight training shoe, lightweight racing shoe. And then I finished my leg at Drimmen, and that was it. I was in love with the West Highway. I thought, my God, I've got mud on my feet and everything. And then I ran the last leg with my friend Susan, who was doing the whole thing. Again, in the shoes, my feet were a wee bit sore by the time I got to the end. I haven't done a marathon over the trails, and that was me. I was hooked. After they did the two legs that year, I decided I was going to do it the next again year. So my focus from then on was training for the fling, and that
for
was
the whole race.
For the fling, not for the race. I made it. I still thought people were a bit mad at doing that. So.
So what year was did
2010? I did the 2010? Yes, I did the fling in 2010.
Yeah.
I did quite a lot of ultras that year, actually, that was my first year in ultras.
Yeah. I do remember that. It was probably one of the first times I remember meeting you.
Yeah, I was
crying.
Because
you'd finished just over 11 hours,
yeah,
wasn't it? 11
yeah.
hours by. And everyone who finished, you were, oh, look, guess what I did?
I thought
just,
I would do about 12
yeah.
hours. I genuinely thought
yeah.
I'd do 12 hours.
Yeah.
And so everybody was expecting me in about 12 hours,
right.
And I was expecting me in at 12 hours. So to get just over 11,
yeah.
I was in floods of tears when I got to the end. My son had got two buses and two trains
That's
to be there
right, yes.
and missed me coming in because I told him I'd be
yeah.
there 12 hours. so yeah, he's like, oh, what are you doing here already? Like I had to phone him, and he was in the pub around the corner. So he missed me coming in after getting two buses and two trains up to see me. So yes, nobody was more surprised than me that
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
So,
and then so once that was over, did you always want to do the full race? Was that always on the agenda?
Not really. I think once I got the fling over and done with, and that was my first year of doing ultras, and I'd done most of the Sums races that year.
Mm.
I think the only one I didn't do was Ayr. So, and I just was going out and enjoying them. I hadn't done anything. I never.
Mm.
It was all new.
Yeah.
So everything I did was a new adventure, and I was just enjoying it. Mm. So it wasn't until I got.
And it's a PB every race.
Everyone was a PB. But they were all brand new races.
Yeah.
They were not all brand
yeah.
new races. So it was quite exciting for everybody. You know,
mm.
there was the Clydeside for the first time. The,
yeah.
All the D30. It was brilliant. So it was a great year, and I was loving it all. And I really did genuinely just. Everybody's laughing. I took my camera everywhere and took lots of pictures. And I was getting good times because I was relaxed
yeah.
and not chasing anything. It was a different story when the next again you came around and you're
yeah.
trying to chase it. Oh, I got this time last time, and
yeah.
And that's when it kind of just all starts falling apart.
Yeah.
when
yeah.
you're chasing times. So yeah, it's been great. I've loved it.
Yeah. And then your first West Highland Way was 2011.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yeah.
do you want to tell us a little bit about the build up to that and how that went?
Ian did my training plan. We sat down in January. We always sit down in January and look at the training plan. So we looked at all of what he was doing before and his long runs and things like that. And we basically, our long runs were slotted in January, so I knew exactly what I was doing. And I did all the training with Ian leading up to that. We had, for the first few months, it was just doing shorter, speedier stuff, I got a half marathon PB and a 10K PB and so on leading up to that. And then I think it was from March onwards, wasn't it, that we did the longer stuff, started getting the longer distance stuff, and did my back-to-back in May. So yeah, I did basically what I was told. I'm very compliant that way sometimes. So yeah, I just followed the plan that I was given, and I felt great. I felt really ready for it, and I loved it, I have to say. Well, up until I hurt my ankles, I loved it. And everything was going really well, looking on course for probably around about 23 and a half hours that year, until I came off of Granick Moor, and my ankles just, they just wouldn't, I couldn't move them, it was awful. Couldn't go down hills at all. So when you come off Granick Moor, heading down towards King's House, I was having to walk, and I was like, what's going on? I've just flew across Granick,
yeah.
I passed you, and
yeah,
I remember.
Fast, yeah.
And from then on, I couldn't run another step. So I ended up doing 25:57 and still feel really cheated, actually.
Mm.
I don't have that sense of achievement
right.
yet, even though I've got
my
goblet. I still need to do it properly. I feel like I still need to do it properly.
Right.
And I know that sounds really stupid to people,
mm.
but I was just so disappointed that I couldn't even run from when I got round the corner and into the car park. I couldn't
yeah.
actually run at all.
Yeah.
And then
at the hospital. Yeah. Well, I remember getting into Kim not leaving because I was having a battle that day and my feet were in a real mess. So I come into that area and Dr. Chris is looking after you and you're on one bed and I'm on the other bed. But even then I could see that you were determined to finish.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was no question that you were stopping then.
No.
And even if you had to walk, which you did, you made it.
There was absolutely no doubt in my mind that I was going to finish. Even I was lying there with ice packs on my ankles and had bumps right in the front. I looked like, you know, the comedy bumps that you get when you see it on a cartoon, somebody hits you over the head with a hammer and there's a big bump. That was in front of my ankles. It was absolutely bizarre. Yeah. But it was painful and it was slow, but there was nothing was stopping me getting to the end.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to put all that training in for nothing, which led on to the next skiing year, which almost did. Well, I did do for nothing because I didn't finish last year.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what happened the next year.
Well, again, the training had been pretty much the same. It didn't really change very much. I would say it was almost exactly the same training. Mm-hmm. And I felt great leading up to it. My times had been faster on the long runs and things. But the time I got to Inversnaid, my ankles were really sore, and that's not even the most technical part. Mm-hmm. So after Inversnaid, it's all the jumping off the rocks and things, and I just thought, this can't be happening again, and it's really early on in the race.
You've not had that again
from
the previous race.
And I had done, because I'd done my back-to-backs and done everything else, I thought, oh, I'll maybe get the issues again, but I didn't. And so by the time I got to Inversnaid, I was a wee bit down. By the time I got to Bain Glass, I was in bits. I was just, I just thought, this is over for me. Met my crew at Crown Larrick, and I was almost in tears at that point, and I said, I think it's game over. And we decided, because there's a lot of downhills there, this will be the test. So let's just get to Octor Tyre and see how I am. I'll see how I cope with the downhills. And I couldn't go downhill. What, uphills were fine. I could march uphill, no problem. The minute I tried to go downhill, it was an agony. And it was just that the minute my foot went, you know, I pulled out Octor Tyre. I didn't want to, and I think no race is worth ending up in hospital over, and I didn't want to end up in hospital again. And I just could see it getting worse and worse, and I didn't want to walk to the end.
So that started a lot earlier than the previous year
much earlier. And it was such a miserable day as well. I thought, I'm going to walk from here with broken ankles and in this kind of weather, no thank you. So I wanted to preserve my ankles and just rethink it, and that's what I've had to do this year. I've had to completely rethink things.
Right.
So
how is it now?
This year we tore up the training plan and started again, basically. We put in different runs completely. There was one, I did a blog about it, that I ran from King's House to Kinlochleven to Altmerfaid to Kinlochleven to King's House. So I was up the top of the Dibble four times. And that was about doing the downhills and making sure my ankles get stronger. So I've done a lot more hillier stuff like that, and make sure that I'm going and doing like repeat stuff. I ran after the fling last Saturday. I ran to Kinlochleven again. I was meant to be doing it to Fort William, but Nick was driving back to Lincoln and I didn't want to keep him out for a bit longer, but I felt great, absolutely brilliant. And I've got myself a personal trainer as well. I mean, Ian did my plan, but the personal trainer was when Donnie had posted that he'd had a studio in Edinburgh. I thought, oh, he's an ultra runner. He'll understand.
Yeah.
He'll understand what I need. Mm. So I called him up, and I've been seeing Donnie since, I think it was late January I first went to him. And I think that's really helped as well, the fact that he is an ultra runner and a good one at that. Everything he does is geared towards strengthening me and I told him, he asked me what I was looking for. And everything he's done has been to strengthen me, and everything's geared towards ultra running, you know, well, a running in general anyway. Whereas I think a normal PT wouldn't quite understand that. I mean, Donnie will work it into knowing when I've got my long runs or when I've got like a thing like this weekend. So it's working really well, and I think the combination of Ian's training plan and Donnie has worked really well this year, and I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really ultra confident and really good, and fingers crossed it's all going to go well on the day. I mean, I'll get to the end this year, there's no way I'm pulling out regardless, but I should knock a few hours off my time, I reckon.
And your race last weekend, the fling, no problems there?
No problems whatsoever.
Again, you had a really good time.
I had a bit of a downtime in between Inversnaid and Bain Glass. Again, I think it's because so many people Well, not so many people were passing me. I think about six or seven runners passed me on that section. Now, I was deliberately taking it easy because just jumping off the rocks, it just makes me aware every time, thinking, jumping off all the rocks, my ankles. I'm maybe being overcautious, but I would rather just take that wee bit extra. If it's going to take me 20 minutes extra, then that's fine. But I did get into Benglass and I was a wee bit worried because I was hoping to get in there about 8 hours and it was about 8.5 hours. So I was a bit behind my time and I phoned Ian and I says, look, I'm in 8.5 hours. I think it's going to be about 11.5 hour finish. And he says, no, you can do this in 2.5 hours. Of course you can, just and you know what? I did. Well, I did it in 2:37. So I just got my head on and I passed loads of people. They're like, my goodness, what did you do? How do you? And I was just bouncing past people. Yeah. Nobody passed me in that section. So it was good. Yeah. Apart from relay runners.
I think there's good lessons there for people. I used to think that I'd go down Connacht Hill. Where I tended to go down quite cautiously. There's some guys, you see, I stood at Connacht Hill last week and I'm absolutely astounded at the way some of these people, you could tell who the hill runners were, the way they bounded down. But I took the view, I would rather take 5 minutes and get down safely, because you'll make 5 minutes up over a big race. And I think Sandra's approach of saying, like, this bit I find a wee bit trickier. There's some people can dance up the side of Loch Lomond and fair play to them. But I think that's a good lesson, because you got it back the next bit.
Yeah.
You just pass again. And people, you know, if you don't worry about you're far better taking 5 minutes longer and get down in one piece than coming down with a sprained ankle or something.
Yeah, well, I took it easy coming off Connacht Hill. Like I was told to, that you'd say to me, I don't want you to see you before this time. I don't want you to see. So I was following a plan. It wasn't just ad hoc. I deliberately kept it back and deliberately didn't go too fast at these sections. And again, as I say, talking of when people were passing me. I did pass all of the people yet again in that section, and I think they were pushing themselves over that section and knackering themselves. And when I passed them, probably around Kaupu Alley area, they were looking really tired and struggling. And I was flying. I was right through there.
Yeah.
I felt great, and obviously that worked. And that's what I'm taking into the race with me. I'm doing it exactly the same. I'm not changing anything in that respect.
Yeah.
It'll be that was just part of the. I'm going to run the race like this, so I'm going to run. This is just a training plan for the race.
Well, I know when I looked at the splits, and I like to play around on the spreadsheets, and I think it's fascinating just seeing your different people's positions, and not only the positions overall, but how they've done that leg. And if you look at yours, you know your final leg was a lot further up than your overall position.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows that compared to the field, you finished strong. I don't know whether you listened to last week's when I interviewed Stuart Mills, because he has a totally different approach to ultra running, and he feels he likes to go off as fast as he can, and he gets it. But I find it interesting when I was chatting to him, because he gets a real buzz from being leading the race and being up with the leaders, whereas we're not going to be in that situation. And I think I have a similar approach to you. I get a big buzz from finishing stronger. And my better races have always been when I'm passing people in the last third, because you know that gives you a real boost, doesn't it? And I've been in other races where people are catching me, and I know which I prefer.
Yeah.
There's
nothing more demoralising. I think I would agree. And I there's so many different ways people can run this. And we'd never look at Stuart's times. It's hard to knock that. He's a quality runner, very good, but. For me, I much prefer psychologically moving through the field. I just think it leaves you feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit depressing having lots of people in any race coming past you when you feel you're tying up and all the rest.
Okay, so this one, as we think about the 2013 race, it's 7 weeks away. What you say? You seem pretty positive about it. What are your thoughts about what you're going to do maybe between now and the race, not both physically but also just mentally as well, preparing?
Well, I've got two more long runs to do. I'm doing Mulgaid to Balmahan back one day, and then I'm doing from Glencoe to get to my Fort William. So two more to go.
Yeah. They're back to back.
I've done two back to backs now, because I did the Caterham Trail over 2 days a few weeks back, and then I did the Fling and then the Kimmel Leaven. So I think two back to backs is more than enough. Mentally, I'm quite chilled about it all. But then that's the way I am anyway. You know, Ian was like quite amazed at how relaxed I am leading up to the race, and even the night of the race I'm kind of a laid-back person, you know. I'm just looking forward to get going. I think get the last two runs out of the way, and I'm ready to, just get me to the start line, get me there at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I find it quite funny to see how laid back Sandra is, because I think most of us have done this. I think the majority of people really struggle with the week before and the old tapiritis thing in a few weeks. And I was like that. It really, it starts to dominate your moods and all the rest of it. And Sandra's just completely laid back about it. It's obviously a much better way to be if you can be like that, because you don't waste as much nervous energy.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's something you can really have much influence. I think it just comes down to your own nature.
Yeah. Again, I think one of the things I did pick up from Stuart last week in his blogs is that a good positive attitude makes, I think, a massive difference.
Mm-hmm.
And if you approach your race feeling good and feeling you're going to do a particular time what you're capable of, then you've got far more chance, haven't you? Whereas if you go in feeling really negative, feeling that this has not gone right, then it's not going to be as good. So
yeah.
You keep your positive attitude.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
It was just a last thing, and that was quite a shock, I think, to Sandra and our backup team when they supported me in last year's Devil of Barrels.
Yes.
They had a slightly more difficult experience, I think, than they were used to.
Yes.
With Sandra's positive approach.
Are you not as positive, then?
I was slightly enough. I if I'm going well, I'm positive, but I think I would say I'm generally much further down the negative scale than Sandra is.
I'm easy to support. I just do as I'm told with my support crew.
Okay, well, I've got some questions that have been put forward on the Facebook, and also Murdo, he sent me an email. And Murdo's question was to both of you, but starts off to Ian. Could you describe in a bit of detail the training program that you've put together for Sandra? Did you invent it, or was it taken from somewhere? Is it somewhat rough and ready, or exactly what's to be done each day over a long period? So
I think I'd say, first of all, it's good to hear Murdo's moved on to email. I thought you were going to say Murdo had written you a letter.
No.
sorry, Murdo, just kidding. The training plan we worked out was really based on the experience that I had of doing the race. And so it's not as structured, I would say, as yours, John. It's not as structured as saying every day we know what we're going to do, partly because I think our lives are such that doesn't quite work. We've got to have a bit more flexibility. So we look at what we're doing. We look at the weekends that things are happening. For example, next weekend's the Catalan Trail Race. We're helping out at that. So that's not a weekend that lends itself to a long run. And we kind of plot around that and see how it works. Sandra's got her base is very much around her run to and from work every day. So she's got that base mileage. So it's really looking at each of the weekends and saying, okay, let's progressively build up. We know we've got the Balmaha weekend, that gets slotted in. We know, I've always quite liked something at the end of what I would always call phase one, the end of March type of time. And this year we penciled in the 50k for that, which was good and gives a benchmark. It's, you know, running a wee bit faster, I've always thought it's quite a good thing, getting some road speed as well, it's a good thing. So we penciled that in, we penciled the fling in as the sort of long run backed up with the 2 day. There was a weekend in the Catalan. So it's really done around that. It's probably done on a week to week basis, looking at the long runs. And we don't worry too much about the midweek, it just kind of happens.
Yeah. Right.
And I think we do spend a bit of time with thinking about the taper, even right from the beginning, as to, okay, the last, Sandra's already said the two long runs that she's got coming up, and then sort of working out how that's going to work in terms of the taper.
Do the interval sessions as well?
I quite like the, one of the things that Sandra mentioned, the Glencoe to Fort William run, I think the objective of that, because we're always thinking, what's the point of this session? And I think the objective of that is almost to show, get into Sandra's head, how quickly it is to run that section.
Mm.
Because I remember, John, we did a race up there, up the last stage of the Larrigmoor.
Mm.
And I think I was under 2 hours, and you were even faster, about an hour and a half, hour 40 or something.
Mm.
And you actually think, my goodness, like if I can do that in 3:15 or whatever in the race, that's almost double the time you know you can run it if you're flat out. And I think mentally, that's a very good thing. It helps you keep going. You realise that every step you're running, you're coming a bit faster. So they've all got objectives, these, but not as structured as down to every day.
Yeah. Okay. And for Sandra, are you happy having a structured programme like that? Do you feel it's benefited you having, you were saying the first year you just did what you were told.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that helpful?
Well, Ian's got far more experience in ultrarunning than I have, and that of that particular race. So yeah, I trust his judgment.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm happy to go with what he says. As he says, I run to work to and from work. So it's all scheduled round about that anyway. I mean, my long runs are just put in, and that's what we do. So yeah, I'm happy to go with that. I can't follow a really structured training plan. I just get to the stage where if I'm told I have to do something, I tend to not do it. you know what I mean? It's just and I find it really difficult, because then it will start playing your head if I do happen to miss it for any reason, whether it be work or anything, and then you're thinking, oh, I've missed that, and it starts, that starts messing with me. So as much as it's structured from January, we know which long runs we're doing, the rest of the stuff's just kind of, you know, we go with the flow.
I agree. I think that idea of those big runs being your big stones, as it were, you know, and you get those in first, and if you miss the odd run in the week, it doesn't really matter, but if you miss a big 30 mile run, it will matter.
Yes.
You know, and it's getting those in place, isn't it? Okay, question from Andy Johns for Sandra. Have you got any further with finding out how to avoid the swollen ankles issue? We talked about that a little bit that you had before. He had a similar problem last year, but thankfully not until the day after the West Hallam Way.
Yeah.
But you talked a little bit about that. Do you want to say anything more?
I've spoken to Andrew Murray quite a bit about it, and he also has suffered from it. How to prevent it is, for me personally, was doing like the stuff that I've been doing, going up and down hills a little bit more. Now, Andy does that all the time, so I'm not sure how I can say to him to prevent it, but I know that Mark Keddie also has the same issues. He definitely has the same kind of thing that I got. For me, again, somebody has said to me, how do you prevent this? And I says, get a personal trainer. not everybody can do that. And I just think that's helped. That give me the edge this year. That and the different training that I've done. Now Andrew had told me that I probably will suffer from it again. It's not going to ever go away completely, or it might just pop up in a random race, or might come up this year. And he just says, just make sure your crew's got some ice at checkpoints and get your ice on it right away. And he showed me how to strap it up if I'm struggling again with that, and it's basically a figure of eight, just try and keep my foot quite level. But it's not going to be something that's going to stop me again, it won't stop me again. But I have, touch wood, I've had no issues this year, even with all the mileage that I have done, and I've done quite a lot of, you know, quite tricky ground, and that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
So hopefully, and maybe it will come back, who knows. But if it does, I'll deal with it.
I think that's quite an important point about the mental side of it as well, because I think Sandra said earlier on about the last year it happened quite early. I always think the second year of the West Highland Way race is probably mentally the most difficult, particularly if you're a bit behind where you were the first year, because it starts coming back how sore everything was. And if you're saying, I'm behind schedule, my ankle's a bit sore, and last year I ended up in hospital, mentally it's very hard to push through that. And I think part of it's really positive, the things from Andrew about, if it does happen, this is what we do. It's getting into it's not a disaster. This is what you do, and it will come through, and you get to there. So mentally, much better place. And I know that it can cope with this. And the other positive is, for all this has been really sore and looked serious, it's one of these things that passed and not done any lasting damage.
No.
So that's quite a positive as well, I think.
Yeah.
I couldn't wear heels for a week, though. That was quite upsetting.
Yeah. I'm convinced as well, it takes our body at least a year or two to get used to these sort of mileages. You know, if you come in even from a decent road running background, it's very different, isn't it? Particularly the quads, you know, and those long downhills. In a road marathon or road run, how far do you run downhill? Mostly it's 5 minutes at the most. You know, whereas Connick Hill and then coming up into Kinloch Leven, it's half an hour, 40 minutes, isn't it? And that's what, you know, I think it takes a while to condition that.
And it's quite odd how that happens. You know, you worked really hard after your first year in your quads, it's very successfully. But I always found my first run of the year in the West Highland Way, I was about 4 days, I couldn't walk. And then that was it, that was fine. Never had a problem with my quads after that.
I don't know if she's
either. Yeah.
It's odd.
Okay, Andy John's question for you, Ian. In 10 years, we could well see 1,000 people in the ballot for 250 places. Has he thought about how the current ballot system could cope with this sort of number?
Well, I suppose the first question is, are we likely to get to 1,000? And I think my instinct is probably not. We We were a wee bit concerned about 2 or 3 years ago, where there was quite an explosion in numbers and people running ultras. We really thought, you know, we've been at the sort of where we were, 250, 260 entries now for a few years. So I think it's maybe settled down. Added to that, we're going to have a new race in July, the Great Glenway. Some of the people who have done the West End, we might fancy doing that. Gives a bit more variety and choice. Delighted Bill and Mike are putting that on. I think that'll add to the scene, maybe take a bit more pressure off. So I don't think there is. I think if there were a thousand people, we'd still need to have a ballot, because I think the capacity of the course is around, unless we change the race significantly, and I don't think we've got plans at the moment to do that. I think the capacity's around the 200 or so. More from a medical point of view, I know John had 500 in the Fling, and I think the Fling moved up a level this year. I think everything I saw was a superb event. But I think the medical issues of having somebody out for an all day in the daylight is quite different from having people out for up to 35 hours. And certainly the advice from Dr. Chris and from Sean is at the moment 200 is where they feel comfortable. So it would just mean more people not able to do it, I think, if we did get to that. But yeah. Do you see, I think it's a bit unlikely. You know?
Okay. Mike Raffan asks Sandra, is there anything you would like to see changed about the race?
The only thing, I did think about that, I wouldn't change anything with the course, is I'd like to see a proper finish line. I feel that, again, maybe it's because I've still got that sense of achievement of not having the sense of achievement when I got to it, but just to see a sign saying this is a refinish, I think for every race has it. And I know it's the iconic thing is getting to the leisure centre doors and all that kind of thing, but to finish a race, You want to see a finish line, you get to the end, and where's my finish line? Especially maybe somebody that's coming from abroad to come and do it. And I just feel that it's such a big race, it should have a bit of a sense of occasion about it.
Okay.
That I would say that would be the only thing I would change. But other than that, I think I wouldn't change anything about the course or anything.
Yeah. I did love the Fling finish this year.
Yeah,
do you?
It's fantastic.
You know, when I got to the village, oh, what's that?
Where's it going? What's
yeah,
with it?
And then
when
we turned left, and to see that the line of flags, it was
just
and because in the past everyone was sort of milling around, whereas you had a little space to yourself, didn't you? It was great.
Really good finish.
Okay, Robert Kinnard asked for both Ian and Sandra, picking up on a Facebook post from Keith, what part of the West Island Wave Trail would you like to see improvements made on, and do you like the changes to Connick Hill?
Me? You?
Well, both of you kids.
I like the changes to Connick Hill. It's made it safer for me coming down, so, and I take it quite easy coming down there anyway, to be honest, but. We've got to remember that we're not the only people using. We don't own Connick Hill. It needs to be safe for everybody. It needs to be safe for all the walkers. It's a very iconic part of the trail. It's right next to Balmaha. It's always going to be a really busy part of the West Highland Way. So it has to be preserved. And as much as people are moaning about it, oh look what they've done, they're going to put an escalator in next. It needs to be preserved. We need to keep it for everybody. All the walkers, all the runners, everybody that's out there enjoying it. And I think that. It's put a few, as I say, noses out of joint, but I quite liked it personally.
Okay.
I wouldn't, would I improve anywhere else? I sort of could tarmac Rannoch Moor, that would be nice. Rannoch Moor is probably my least favourite part. I find it a wee bit bleak and quite sore on the feet. So,
if you put tarmac on, it'd be worse.
I know, but I mean, just rocky, you know how you got that sort of rutted part of it. When I did it last weekend, actually, I quite enjoyed it. I never thought I'd hear myself say that, but it's because I was feeling on top of the world. I had a really good double day.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd feel like that after running the Fling, but I felt pretty good. So, no, I guess it wouldn't change anything, but I quite like Connick Hill as it is now.
Yeah. Okay,
I would probably say that I've seen the route change quite considerably, and the bit that always makes me laugh a wee bit is the section just a couple of miles after Benglass Farm, where I think in about 2005 there was a new track put in, partly just in time for the Caledonian Challenge, and we used to have to scramble along the river there and hold on to a fence, and that is definitely easier to run, but it lost a wee bit of its character there. I quite enjoyed that. I think there's maybe two things I think they could do a bit more with it. There must be scope, I would have thought, to put a path in instead of the road the 2 miles before Drimmen. You know, you could put quite a nice trail path, forest trail winding through the fields there. I would have thought something could be done better, because I don't think that road bit's terribly great.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the worst bit of the whole route, I think. So you could maybe do something there. The other thing I would like to see them do, and I should probably take this up with them, because it's something they could. I'd like to see them put traffic lights at the A82 crossing before Ochter Tower Farm. That road is really, really busy, and the cars fly up there. I think to put traffic lights there would be a good thing from a safety perspective.
Yeah.
Just slow folk down. I mean, not just for us, I think for the walkers too.
Yeah, they had two guys out the flying cross like Lollipop Mountain, so it was quite good.
Yeah.
Helen was there, wasn't she?
There was two guys when I passed.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. So I think that could be an improvement. I like what they've done in bringing the route under the road the next time you cross.
Yeah.
I think that's been really good.
Oh, that's just great, isn't it?
But it's more difficult to see how they could do that the first crossing.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a non-sensible question to Sandra. What do you think about the idea of having a tram on Rannoch Moor with a certain donut drive through at halfway?
I think that one's best left unanswered, really. Was that Robert? Was it?
Yeah.
We don't want swearing in the podcast.
No, I think that was a non-sensible one.
Yes.
Bill Ayres, he was keen to know who does the cooking and who drinks the most wine.
I think that'd be me and me.
Okay.
Ian likes cooking at the weekends, actually. So I do most of the cooking during the week because I'm in by 3 o'clock, so I'm in hours before you.
Right.
So I do pretty much all the cooking during the week, unless I don't feel like it, and then he'll do it. But absolutely no problem.
Mm.
But Ian likes being in the kitchen at the weekend, and he gets his penny on and sings away and. Leaves the kitchen like a hurricane's been through it, but he cleans it up. I just want to clean it up, so yeah. The kitchen said to me at the weekend, I'm quite happy to hand it over to him while I sit on the couch and drink wine.
I think the wine's a close run thing. Probably we could take more time off, a bit more discipline there. But hey, I liked Andy
nice
Cole's comment in his blog about sort of eating. I take the Andy Cole approach.
Yeah.
We run so we can eat and drink, and
yes.
Not the other way around.
Yeah.
Are you still having your more non-alcohol days than alcohol days a month?
Sometimes.
I had a good month in March, in April, as I was leading up to the London Marathon. It hasn't been quite so good since then.
Well, that's cool. Vicky Hart has asked a question for you, Sandra. She says, has your training changed since your first West Highland Way, and how do you fuel your runs? And do you do many long runs together? And if so, how do you deal with your difference in pace?
I spoke about my training plan completely changing, so I've answered that one. How do I fuel my runs? I'm a bit rubbish, actually. I didn't eat anything during the Highland Flying, not one thing, nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Wow.
For the first 20 miles, I had it's SIS tablets in my bottle, and then I had a vitamin water when I got to Aberdennan. And then Inversnaid I picked up, a bottle of Lucozade, and that was the first sort of energy drink that I'd had. And it's really sweet, so on, and I drank about half of that. And then I had a vodka and Red Bull at Ben Glasgow. I did take a packet of crisps, but I didn't eat them until the end. I didn't eat them until actually I was in the hotel by the time I ate them. So during the West Highland Way race, I do eat at every checkpoint. I'll have chicken cuppa sips. I quite like chicken cuppa sips. And some sort of sandwiches, usually meat paste sandwiches or something, or rolls, Marks and Spencer's soft rolls.
Okay.
And chicken cuppa sips and cups of tea. That's what I'll have during the West Highland Way race. But for a lot of long runs, I tend not to eat anything, really. I can do that, and it works fine for me.
Yeah.
I think again, it's a really interesting one. I think if the experience of, I've got to be careful how I say this, but some of the smaller lady runners seem to need to eat an awful lot less, I think, constitution of the bodies. The bigger male runners, which I probably would have to put myself in, have to eat more, or our bodies kind of give up. It's almost like need more fuel. And it's great if you can, but I think it's one of the areas Sandra and I have spoken a lot about where you don't get away without food in the West Highland Race. And I think you're quite fortunate and you can digest stuff, but the risk is sometimes you might leave it a wee bit late and have to be more disciplined.
I do take something from Balmaha onwards from there. And I mean, during Glenmore, actually, I had half a banana. After 4 hours, I took half a banana every lap. I think it was. Was that every lap? Or every second lap? So I can eat fine. It's not like I can't eat.
Yeah,
I just don't feel the need. But during Glenmore, I took half a banana after 4 hours for the next 8 hours.
Right. And what about if you run together, the difference in pace?
Well,
yeah,
he was a lot faster than me, so he has to run slower.
I thought Vicky probably meant that I'm a wee bit faster, but I don't think that's strictly true. I think if we're, there's a sort of distance where we kind of equalise out, I think. And that used to be about 40 miles, and probably now is about 26 miles, I think. Whereas I think we both did Loch Ness, and we weren't at a similar time. I think the D33, I would probably fancy my chances a wee bit in front of Sandra. The Catalan, I wouldn't.
My 50k time is the same as yours.
Yeah.
You're 10 seconds ahead of me or something.
So I think, well, if we do go out a run, and I'll probably do my long runs about 8 minute mile, 7:45 to 8 minute miling. Sandra's maybe at 8 minute miling, pushing quite hard, but we'll sometimes go out and have a session where I'll do a sort of try and get below 8 minute miling and try and drag Sandra along, and these are quite good. We'll do that maybe 8 to 10 miles, and I feel I've had a good workout, and it's been a really good workout for you, because you're having to work quite hard at that pace. Last year when I was trying to do the Catalan, it was the opposite, because I just found I couldn't keep up with Sandra's pace over 40 odd mile training runs, and I get quite frustrated with that.
Just a bit.
The sort of running a wee bit ahead and looking round to see if I was still there. Oh, it drove me nuts.
You could put a rifle walking too fast. Would you just slow down while you're walking too fast? For sake.
But it does definitely help. I mean, I think we've done some really good sessions. I can think of one just a few weeks ago. We went out on a Saturday and did an 8 mile run along the canal, and the target was to do that in under 8 minute mile pace. And I think we did it in 63:59. We worked every mile to make sure, and I can kind of keep my eye on the watch, and I can keep that pace going, and I can just keep doing it. So that's good fun. I quite enjoy these runs.
Good. The last question we got, again from Robert Kinnard. Once I wake up on Friday morning before the race starts, I can't manage to get any sleep late afternoon, early evening, pre-race. So do you have any tips from your own or others' experience on how to grab some pre-race shut-eye?
For me, again, because I am quite relaxed, I can do it. What I do, I book a room with my guy, and that's where me and the crew congregate and just chill out. And we have always fell asleep, so much so that I nearly missed the race brief in the first year. We were all asleep.
Wow.
We'd be like, oh my God, it's half 12. We better. We had to jump in the car and rush up there. He's on the phone going, where are you? It's like, oops, we're all asleep. So what for me makes me sleepy is we have the heated on quite high in the room, and we all end up just like falling asleep with the heat. Having a hot bath, I think, always sends me to sleep as well. Have a hot bath and read a book if you're going to get some sleep. But that's what we do. We have a hotel room so that we can completely chill out. And the crew will arrive in bits and bobs, but I'm usually there. We got there quite early. As soon as we can check in, we'll get there for about 2. Ian's got stuff to do in the SLM. He'll go and get stuff organised, and I'm in the room for myself, just trying to relax, and I'm usually just reading or watching TV or something. And I think that really, I mean, I'm not very stressed out anyway, but I mean, it definitely relaxes me a wee bit more. Well, I would say that's for me, that's the way forward, but I guess everybody's different.
I think it's a very hard thing to sleep. I think if it's probably Robert's more common with my way of nervous. Everyone I've spoken to finds this the same. The best will in the world, people find it very hard to sleep because you're too tense and too nervous. I for a number of early West Highland races, probably mentioned this in some of these podcasts before, I changed my sleeping pattern. I stayed up all the Wednesday. I took the Thursday and Friday off work, stayed up all the Wednesday night, slept during the day of the Thursday, stayed up all the Thursday night, slept during the day on the Friday. And there's some people just shake their head think that happened. But actually when I managed to do that was quite good, because I was waking up at maybe 4 on the Friday, and I'd adjusted my body to thinking that was about 8 hours I was ahead of everybody else. I had 1 year it didn't work, and I ended up missing much more sleep, and that was a bit unlucky. So I've moved to that after finding the first time I tried it just how tired I was. I knew I had to do something different, but very difficult one. I don't think there's any real secret. 1 o'clock in the morning is a hard time to be starting a race.
I don't mind it.
So some people don't, but I've got a friend Phil Tipping, who, you know, if you'd asked him the questions of one thing you could change about the race, he would say, please change the start time. But the start time fits in so well with really everything. It means we're not causing disruption to other walkers for the vast majority. It means we've got the leisure centre all the time at the finish, it's closed. We've got the prize given on the Sunday. So I don't see the start time changing from 1. I think people just have to try and work their bodies around that.
And that's one of the challenges, isn't it?
It is,
you know, it's sort of that's, you know, well in advance that's what time you're starting, so you do have to Yeah. It's the same for everybody.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, good. Well, thank you very much to the both of you, and hopefully people will find that really helpful. And I hope the race goes well from your perspective, Ian, in the sense of the organising side, it all goes nice and smoothly, and the next 7 weeks everything comes together. And for you, Sandra, I hope you have a great race, and I'm sure your PB will be shattered from last time. So that's great. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you in June.
Hope you've enjoyed the latest West Highland Way Race podcast. Interesting interviews there with Ian and Sandra. So I hope you're running well. If you're out on the trails as you listen to this, then I hope it's a lovely day and you're enjoying your training. If you're in the car or home or wherever you are, I hope you've found this helpful. I've got some more interviews lined up over the next few weeks, so hopefully there'll be at least one a week between now and the West Highland Way Race. If there's anyone that you particularly like me to interview, then do let me know. Or if there's any items that you'd like me to cover over these next few weeks in preparation before the race, then again, please get in touch with me. John Kinniston at westhighlandwayrace.org. Okay, so I hope you have enjoyed this and look forward to the next one. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.